Are you the sort of person who prefers to wear clean clothes? Are you the sort of person who likes their garments to smell like a warm spring day in the mountains? Do you throw a dryer sheet in just to get that extra freshness with your laundry? Do you like to wear a clean, fresh shirt every day? Do you put on fresh undies every day? If you do, that is great, because you are exactly the sort of person I want sitting next to me on a crowded airplane. However, if you are this type of person that likes fresh clothes every day, then I would highly recommend that you avoid a career as an astronaut. Because those people wear the same clothes day after day after day. And I'm talking about the astronauts that are up on the International Space Station, the ones who go up for weeks and months at a time. They don't have a working washing machine on the space station. They can't launder their clothes. So what do? Well, they wear every article of clothing for at least 3 days, often a whole lot longer, as long as they can stretch it out. And then, when it's just too smelly for words, they throw it away. When the Russians send up their unmanned rockets with supplies for the space station, the astronauts then fill the empty capsule with trash and their old clothes, and they send it back to burn up in the atmosphere. So, the next time you look up and see a shooting star, it could just be a trash bag full of old Fruit of the Looms falling out of space. So, why don't the astronauts wash their clothes? I mean, it seems rather wasteful, doesn't it, just to throw them out? Well, the answer is pretty easy. It has to do with water. In space, water is a valuable commodity. To send stuff into space costs between $5,000 and $10,000 per pound. Water is heavy. A gallon of water weighs over 8 pounds. So, do the math, that's just at least $40,000 to send a gallon of water up to the International Space Station. NASA is working on laundry alternatives, but at present, it's still far cheaper just to send up a sack of clothes and then toss them out the airlock when they're done. Water is vital to our survival. The human body can survive weeks without food, but only a few days without water. Our bodies are about 60% water. And because we know instinctively that we need water, we understand when the Israelites are in the wilderness and they have no water, and they demand that Moses do something, and they yell at Moses saying, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt? Are you trying to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" This story that we read today is one of several that take place in the Old Testament's wilderness saga. We call it the Exodus. It's one of several stories that tell of these occasions when the people complained. They complained that they didn't have water. They complained that they didn't have meat. They complained that they were tired of the food that God was giving them. They even complained that there were too many snakes. These stories are not at all flattering to the Israelites. Remember, the Israelites had been slaves in Egypt, forced to toil at difficult tasks. God hears their cries of anguish and, with the assistance of Moses, leads the people out of Egypt. They are chased by the Egyptian soldiers, but the chariots get stuck in the mud and the soldiers are drowned when the Red Sea collapses in on them. The Israelites are free now to move towards the land that God has promised for them. But the going is not easy. They are in the wilderness. And the wilderness is a harsh, nowhere place between what they were and what they will be. A journey of pain and promise. The wilderness often lacks food and water and comforts. All the people have is themselves and God. And so they push on like their ancestor Abraham, called by God to an unknown future. The people journey across the wilderness and they come to a place known as Rephidim and they set up camp there. But why they chose this place is something of a mystery, because there's no water to be found there. Maybe there had been water and it dried up. We don't know, but it seems like a bad decision to establish a camp without a supply of water. And because there is no water, the people get thirsty and they turn on Moses and demand that he, their leader, produce water. He's the one that brought them here, remember? And Moses asked them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" Moses clearly believes that they should put their care in God's hands, that God would care for them all. Moses regards this lack of water as a non-issue. Moses had faith in God. But the people persisted and complained, and they confronted Moses saying, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt? To kill us, to kill our children, to kill our livestock with thirst." Moses turns to God and asks God, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." And God gives Moses instruction. God tells Moses to travel on ahead of the people and take with him some of the elders of the people, and also take with him that staff that he used back in Egypt, the one he used to strike the waters of the Nile, which turned the water to blood and killed all the fish and made the water undrinkable. God said, "Go to that rock at Horeb, and God will be waiting. Strike the rock with the staff, and water will gush forth." Moses follows God's instruction, and the water appears just as God promised. And so Moses gives that place a name. He calls it Massa and Meribah, names that sound like the Hebrew words for quarrel and test, because at that place, the people quarreled and tested the Lord. They demanded to know, "Is the Lord among us or not?" That question, "Is the Lord among us or not?" is truly the question that is at the heart of this incident. The question is not, will we die of thirst in the wilderness? The question is whether or not God is truly present. God exists, yes, but is God watching out for us? Does God care for us? Do we exist as God's playthings to be moved around, to live, to die at God's whim? When the people demand water, they are quarreling with God. They are testing God when they say, "Show us that you are here. Show us that you care." This question is the same question that follows us around every day. Is the Lord among us or not? I wake up, I go through my day, I go to bed, I ask, "Is God with me?" And if things are going well, I'm probably going to say, "Sure, God is with me." But if things are going badly, and I find that I'm in the wilderness, lost, alone, afraid, I might answer, "I'm not sure if God's with me. I expected things to be better than this." It is, after all, the wilderness that tests us when we are confronted by a troubling diagnosis or a job loss, a death of someone close to us, a surgery, a disability, a change we didn't anticipate, any number of occasions when our soul becomes parched. These are our wilderness moments. It is no accident that Jesus ventured into the wilderness to fast and pray and was tested by Satan. Satan offered Jesus anything he might want, and all Jesus had to do was to deny God, to answer the question, "Is God among us?" by saying, "No, I don't think so." We are in the season of Lent. And the 40 days of Lent mirror the 40 days that Jesus spent in the wilderness. And for us, Lent should be a self-imposed time in the wilderness, a time of reflection and testing, a time to practice answering yes to that question, is God with us? If you've ever taken a cruise, you know that the first order of business when everyone is aboard and before the ship even leaves port is for all the participants to participate, all the passengers to participate in a lifeboat drill. Everyone puts on those big, silly looking life jackets and they crowd into the corridors, snaking their way towards their designated meeting spot. And then they get instructed on how to load a lifeboat and get off the ship. And the purpose of the drills is to teach everyone what to do in the unthinkable occasion of a calamity at sea. At home, we are used to fire drills and tornado drills or earthquake drills, all preparing for the events that we hope will never happen. One way to look at Lent is as a wilderness drill, a time to practice and prepare for the moment when we are tempted to ask, is the Lord among us or not? Will we respond with a confident yes, just as Jesus did? Or will we run around in sound and fury as did the thirsty Israelites? Do we believe that God is with us, watching for us, caring for us? Or do we feel abandoned and alone? Moses tapped that rock at Horeb, and the water poured forth, and it slaked the Israelites' burning thirst of desire and doubt. When we find ourselves in a wilderness moment, we know that we only need to seek God's living water. And we can find this water in various places, such as the pages of Scripture. And there we find the many confessions of faith and assurances of God's presence. Our Scripture is an ongoing testimony of God's love for us. Or maybe we can find it in the river of living water, in the many expressions of faith of those that are around us, in their concern and compassion and love for us. Or maybe we find it in worship, or maybe in Sunday school, or a disciples class, or a Bible study. We know that we do not need to be thirsty, because God's living water flows all around us. It is for us the water of creation. It is the water of life. And there is more than enough for all of us to drink deeply. There is enough for us to bathe in, as in the waters of baptism, and become clean. And there's even enough for the astronauts to do their laundry.